ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 13. Rahugana converses with Jadavarat, text number 13. Anyanya vita yati sangha vridha Vairanu bandho vivahan mitascha Adhanya musmin uru kicca vita Badho pasagha viharan vipanaha
Badho pasagha viharan vipanaha
Anyonya vita viti sangha vridha
Anyonya vita viti sangha vridha
Vairanu bandho vivahan mitascha Advanna mushmin uru kritcha vita
Advanna mushmin uru kritcha vita
Badhoppa sagga viharan vipana
Badho sagga viharan vipana
Anyonya
Anyonya
With one another
With one another
Vita Vyati Sangha
Vita Sangha
By monetary transactions Vridha Increased Vaira Anubandaha One is encumbered by enmity Vivahan
Sometimes marrying
Mitaha,
one another.
Cha,
and
Advani,
Advani,
on the path of material existence. Amushmin,
that.
Urukritcha,
by great difficulties.
Vitabadha, by scarcity of money. Upasagai
by
diseases.
Viharan
wandering. Vipanaha
one becomes fully embarrassed.
Translation. Due to monetary transactions, relationships become very strained and end in enmity. Sometimes the husband and wife walk on the path of material progress, and to maintain their relationship, they work very hard. Sometimes, due to scarcity of money or due to disease conditions, they are embarrassed and almost die. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In this material world, there are many transactions between peoples and societies as well as between nations. But gradually, these end in enmity between the two parties. Similarly, in the marriage relationship, monetary transactions are sometimes overpowered by the dangerous conditions of material life. One then becomes diseased, or monetarily embarrassed. In the modern age, most countries have developed economically, but due to business exchanges, relationships seem to be strained. Finally, wars are declared between nations, and as a result of these upheavals, there is destruction all over the world, and people suffer heavily. Chakshuram Militam Jena Tasmay Shri Gurave Namaha. So, we see currently this situation playing out in the world since 2020, that due to upheavals in the world situation, it has caused monetary difficulties, and therefore in most countries there has been a significant rise in domestic violence. So in Australia, one woman dies from domestic violence I think every 8 days. That's quite a big statistic, isn't it? Then that's one death. So over the last, and especially with the upgrade in domestic violence due to the COVID, one woman killed by domestic violence just over a week, and within about say 12-13 days, one child will also die as a result of domestic violence. That's in Australia. What to speak of other countries where they don't have such a watchful eye. And of course we see that when there are disturbances in the monetary transactions, that what may externally appear to be a cozy relationship is really mutual cooperation of sense gratification. And when this sense gratification is no longer there, then people struggle to have a relationship because the relationship is not based upon the good character and the good behaviour of each other, or their moral principles, or anything like that. But usually comes down to that each one is providing one a certain standard of life with a certain standard of sense gratification, and money is the basis of that. And when that money dries up, then we have this violence and domestic violence. So, of course, giving those statistics, that's not including the people who are just bashed, emotionally abused, the events that go unrecorded, which is a huge amount. So, so here, the Bhagavatam is speaking these very sobering words. This is Jabra speaking to King Rahugana. This is a very interesting, it's something that you'll find if you go to any of the Hare Krishna temples all around the world. So we are known as the foremost yoga society, teaching the philosophy of spiritual life. And yet people will, if they come to the Hare Krishna temple, they may hear a Bhagavad Gita class or Srimad Bhagavatam. They will hear these very sobering statements about just the problems that we have in our mundane life in this world. So they're expecting something a little bit more, uplifting, immediately. And people may not have the that they don't have a taste for this sort of a conversation. And sometimes even within the Hare Krishna movement, some of the devotees want to hear a little bit more. Let's, you know, can we just skip to Rasa Leela? Can we just skip to Krishna dancing with the gopis? like that. No, we can't, can we? So, so many people like to be part of a yoga group or a spiritual organization or a religious organization, but not necessarily to hear these sort of topics. So a lot of people, you know, they have different motivations. Quite often, people will go to a spiritual society, a religious society, because they're lonely. They want some company. They're thinking that they don't want to get the company that you might find, you know, in the hotels, drinking alcohol, or in the drug dens, or what have you. So they're thinking if they go to the religious and spiritual societies, they'll get some, friendship, a circle of friends. They'll be able to meet people and they'll be happy like that. And many religious societies cater to that. And the speakers speak on topics which are very pleasing to hear. How by practicing their particular brand of religion or spirituality, everything will be just wonderful in this material world. And to do that, of course, they give people a sense of being empowerment and a sense of justification for anything they want to do. So they speak pleasant things. So if someone goes to such a society, a religious group, then if they have all sorts of problems, all sorts of bad behavior, or what have you, then, you know, that can be just covered over with some, you know, just some help to remove the guilt help them to feel, no, well, everyone's the same. You've got your really bad habits and addictions and what have you, but you'll find everyone here has the same problem, including the priest. So they get a lot of followers. Now, Srila Prabhupada wanted to, Srila Prabhupada, he would say that better one moon in the sky than so many stars. So many stars in the sky, if you go out on the Amavasya, the dark moon night, you can't see anything. You put your hand in front of your face, you can't see. But one moon, even if it's not a full moon, it will illuminate the sky. So one, better one. And Prabhupada, you know, he also said things to the like that, you know, if he could just, make one, pure devotee, you know, one person becomes filled with God consciousness and Krishna consciousness properly, if he could make one such pure devotee, he would consider his whole movement successful. So it's a whole different approach. And of course, many societies, spiritual societies, religious societies, sometimes, unfortunately, but true, it is the monetary aspect which is important. And in fact, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur pointed out that in India, the brahmanas who are even managing temples related to Krishna and Vishnu, Narayan, and sometimes they have the shalagram, shila, the stone, which we know that Lord Narayan resides always within that shalagram. And he says, they're seeing the shalagram or the deity as a stone for cracking nuts to feed their belly. So he's not a person who minces his words. But they're seeing the form of God, which they have in their temple, that will attract people, and the people will come, I will get food, I will get money, I will fill my belly and enjoy. And so the form of the Lord is no more than a stone for cracking nuts to fill one's belly like that. Literally, that's it. About as spiritually elevated their consciousness is. No more than that. And of course, so many, you know, that is the danger in Kali Yuga, that within, you know, friendships, families, husband and wife, parents and children, nations, we've lost one already. there is this quarrel. So now Prabhupada mentions, so you know, this topic here that we're discussing in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada discusses that here we're getting knowledge, and this knowledge is not so we are able to point the finger and criticize and present ourselves, you know, on some high pedestal, we're better than you, not like that. It is knowledge of the nature of this world, the material world, and by understanding that knowledge, it gives us the proper impetus to solve that problem with spiritual knowledge. Not to look at the problems of birth and death, etc., and to just say, well, that's just the way it is. Or to, you know, romanticize it. Or, this is our pastime. You know, ultimately, we're all the supreme, and we choose to take this birth and get kicked like an ass.
Didn't think I was that stupid.
Well, unfortunately, there are minions and millions and millions of people in these different societies and religious groups that actually cater to that mentality. So, so Prabhupada mentions there in this verse, Bhagavad Gita 13:8-12, and it describes the process of knowledge. And I'll just read this process of knowledge. These are the things taught in the Krishna consciousness movement: humility, pridelessness, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of the false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home and the rest. Even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events. Constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place. Detachment from the general mass of people. Accepting the importance of self-realization and philosophical search for the absolute truth, all these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be, is ignorance. So this is, as Prabhupada describes, this is the staircase of the process of knowledge. And the first one begins with humility. So he mentions this a couple of times in his purport. So towards the end, he says that beginning from practicing humility up to the point of realization of the supreme truth, the absolute personality of Godhead, this process is just like a staircase beginning from the ground floor and going up to the top floor. Now, on this staircase, there are so many people who have reached the first floor. So, of course, we'll get to the first floor. That's humility. So many people, but not that many. The second floor or the third floor, etc. But unless one reaches the top floor, which is the understanding of Krishna, he is at a lower stage of knowledge. So that's there we see, if you can look at it, a staircase, unless you're on the top, you're all on the we're all on a lower stage of knowledge. One may think one is very elevated, but unless you're at the top, you're actually on a lower level. So there's the beginning of the guru, you know, chipping away at our false pride and bringing us to a point of humility. If anyone wants to compete with God and at the same time make advancement in spiritual knowledge, he will be frustrated. It is clearly stated that without humility, understanding is not truly possible. To think oneself God is most puffed up, although the living entity is always kicked by the stringent laws of material nature. He still thinks, I am God because of ignorance. The beginning of knowledge, therefore, is amanikva, humility. One should be humble to know that he is subordinate to the Supreme Lord. Due to rebellion against the Supreme Lord, one becomes subordinate to material nature, and one must know and be convinced of this truth. So this is what we're discussing here, that ultimately, because all of us in this world, including those in the various so-called yoga society, religious societies and spiritual societies who don't follow the process of knowledge, they're all being kicked by the material energy. They're all subordinate to the material energy. All living entities are subordinate to the material energy. They're forced to take to die repeatedly, forced to accept karma, forced to take birth again, and forced to accept old age. As Prabhupada mentioned, what to speak of the followers? Prabhupada mentions, I think it is Maya Baba, who was still followed to this day. People think that they can become supreme by following this personality. Prabhupada says, although he presented himself as a person of knowledge and as a guru or as a representative of the supreme or the supreme, he had no idea that any second he was going to be killed in a car accident, which he was. So, you know, someone who's the leader, who's being worshipped as the supreme, and such a person doesn't know, oh, there's another car coming, I've got no idea of it. I'm God, I'm the all-knowing God, all-pervading, absolute concentrated knowledge, And I can't see what's going to happen 2 seconds in front of me, or just around, you know, 2 meters up the road. I've no idea. But I'm supreme. And, of course, the followers will still follow. Oh, yes. That may be my end too, but I'm also supreme. I'm looking forward to my leela, my pastime, when I will be crushed by iron and glass and slammed into a tree, etc. Limbs. That is all part of my leela as the supreme. So, but humility, that's a very puffed up position, isn't it? You know, sometimes you see if, I was asking some children, but this happened to the adults as well. I was asking some children a question, as I like to do. I think you might have been there, a question. And they kept trying to guess the answer. And eventually I said, it's okay to say you don't know. You know, there's a lot of silly answers coming, and sometimes I have to do that with the adults as well. Just a simple bit. Especially the ones that go to some spiritualist school, bogus school of yoga. You can't stop them. And seriously, you can't. Their wives have to drag them away sometimes. Sometimes we go to preaching engagement. I'm sitting there. I might ask something, simple question, what's the difference between matter and spirit? Oh, the nonsense that comes out. And then, you know, you say something which shows that they're not right, so they try something else, and, you know, you say something, they see that they're not right, but they'll just keep going. And then the wife comes up, look, you know, leave the pundit alone. But to say, oh, I don't know, I don't know. And sometimes they get all confused. Oh, you know, back at the yoga center, we've got these charts, and, you know, it's all there, and you know. But although I'm supreme, I can't remember even what's on the chart, let alone understand it or explain it. Okay. So Prabhupada, you know, again, at the beginning of this process of knowledge, when he, at the purport, he describes this humility again in this way. He says, this process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction of the field of activity. So in these yoga schools and spiritual schools, they teach that this process of knowledge, which is the summary of the Vedic from the Vedas, they say that this is material and should be avoided. That acting in these terms and thinking in these terms should be rejected. So there's very little hope for them, to come to the point. As I say, a lot of people haven't even reached the first stage of knowledge. And they're the gurus. Anyway, it says, this process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction of the field of activity. But actually, this is the real process of knowledge. If one accepts this process, then the possibility of approaching the absolute truth exists. This is not the interaction of the 24 elements as described before. This is actually the means to get out of the entanglement of those elements. So he goes on, he says, as for the knowledge outlined here, the items may be analysed as follows. Humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honoured by others. The material conception of life makes us very eager to receive honour from others. But from the point of view of a man in perfect knowledge, who knows that he is not this body, Anything, honor or dishonor, pertaining to this body is useless. One should not be hankering after this material deception. People are very anxious to be famous for their religion, and consequently sometimes it is found that without understanding the principles of religion, one enters into some group which is not actually following religious principles, and then wants to advertise himself as a religious mentor. As for actual advancement in spiritual science, one should have a test to see how far he's progressing, and he can judge by these items. And then Prabhupada goes on to describe these various items. So of course, as soon as we see that someone is from a religious or spiritual circle, yoga circle, and it's obvious that they have no spiritual knowledge, it may not be obvious to them because they're puffed up with the concept that they are supreme, full of knowledge. But quite often it's obvious to the wife and the kids and their friends that like that. But they're very proud of that. They're very proud, and that pride indicates that they're in the bodily concept of life. And being in the bodily concept of life means there's no spiritual knowledge at all. So they're very easily caught out. So here, this particular section here is dealing with particularly these, says here that the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age and disease, detachment from entanglement with children, wife, home and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events. So these particular ones are being discussed here, that this is part of the process of knowledge, because they give that impetus for spiritual understanding, that we understand that by studying these, we see that we are completely controlled and suffering under the laws of the material energy. So if we study these, that will be the conclusion we come to. And that will bring us to the humble position where we can actually then say, I am not supreme, and actually follow the process of trying to take shelter of the actual supreme. So a very, very important step is to understand these principles, that how we are suffering in this material world. So, you know, this is one of the things that made it easy for me to come to Krishna consciousness, because I understood that I was actually suffering. I've told the story sometimes that, in my misspent youth, sometimes it was like most of the hippies. Sometimes there's some psychedelics, you know, a bit of hoochie-cooch, this, that and the other. And so sometimes when one is intoxicated, again, one feels that one is, reaching these very elevated stages of knowledge and realization. So you see intoxicated people, they just talk. Because they feel that, suddenly just got so much knowledge about everything. For a sober person, sitting next to them, it's quite, it's a real joke. But for all the intoxicated people, they're just enamored by each other's great realizations were there. So I had, there was one friend of mine who was Indian, from India. He was up in New South Wales. I stayed at his home for some time, he had some bodily injury. And I asked him, you know, how did you get these significant injuries? He said, I used to take a lot of drugs, and after a little while, I felt that I was God. And I was watching a movie at the picture theatre up on the high mezzanine, and when I was convinced that I was God and I could fly, I jumped off. Of course, coming to the very instant realization, I can't fly. It's a hard. He could have just approached the bona fide spiritual master. Oh no, that's too complicated. There's many stories. I knew a group of teenagers who, would take the datura. You know, datura is a plant very highly intoxicating, so they have those flowers and a big tree. So they climbed up into the big tree and they become so intoxicated. And I think out of about six or seven, about five of them died that night. So, but you know, that's the nature of Maya, the material energy. Allows us to think that we are so elevated one way or another through intoxication or some crazy philosophy. Material energy leads us like that. And then, when we come to the offensive platform of thinking, I am God, then she will really kick us in the head very hard. The stalwart bogey yogis will take that as part of their pastime or their leader. So, anyway, you know, in my youth, I never ever thought I was God, but I used to think sometimes that I had these big realizations. And I thought one time, but the next morning, I could never remember what I was thinking. It's part of the, but you don't think like that. That I can't even remember what I was thinking, but I'm so knowledgeable. I have some. I've got these great realizations, but I can't remember them from one day to the next. Unless you know, if you're sober, you can't remember them. So anyway, one time I thought to myself, what I'll do is next time I'm out with the boys, I'll write it down. When I get to the summit of my spiritual realizations, I'll write it down in the book. So I had this little pad and a pencil in my pocket there. And so I did write something down, but then I lost the book. That's part of being the Supreme, of course. However, one day I found it. So people used to call me Danny. And I looked in this book, so there's only one sentence in it. And I said, Danny, I think you've made a mess of your life. So, but in essence, I actually had a realization. But, I kept thinking, what are the wonderful things? And then the more I looked at it, I thought, what a mess. So, that was very helpful. That was very helpful because, it led me to want to not follow that path. Although, as like most people in this world, giving up bad habits is impossible. It's not possible. And, they spend billions and billions of dollars on, all sorts of different programs all over the world, and it's all useless. And you know, in the end, most governments gradually just legalize the intoxication and supervise it, and really they can't stop anything. It's increasing, you know, the level of intoxication. The type of intoxication is increasing in its potency to disturb the mind, and the governments are decreasing in their ability to control such. But it did lead me to the point where I started looking at my life, you know, my social life, taking intoxication, this, that, and the other. And I've mentioned this before. I did get to the point, at one stage where I couldn't stand it anymore, because once I'd looked what I said, I actually started looking very close at my life, and I really didn't like it. And I started to become quite miserable, because I was just seeing everything as very superficial, the things that I was doing, but I was trapped in it, and that made me feel even worse. And then I started looking at my friends, and like here, what are the monetary transactions? What favors are we trading to be friends? You know, there's drinking buddies, smoking buddies. Mm-hmm. And then if you don't want to trade in that currency anymore, there's no friendship. There is no friendship. Not a speck. In fact, you become the enemy. These days, if of course this is something that Hare Krishna children, you know, gradually have to deal with it, because quite often they will go to the schools and they find even in primary school, to speak of secondary school and tertiary school, that most of the people they know who they take as very dear friends will gradually start taking one intoxication or another. And if they don't join in with them, they're actually not considered to be their friends anymore. So it becomes as mentioned here, it becomes a real problem. So this philosophy is just not just for the adults, the actual children, you know, if even in the playground, you know, if the children are vegetarian and the others say no, you know, to be a friend you have to eat the meat. If they don't eat the meat, then they can be bullied and ostracized and can cause a lot of problems. So these verses of the Bhagavad Gita, they play out, but no one looks. You know, if you mention this sort of thing to the teachers, kids are kids. They're covered over. And of course they're getting this philosophy from the yoga societies. You know, some excuse is covered over. But not to see it as an actual problem. So that understanding, to be able to see that problem in material existence, to be very pessimistic, Prabhupada mentions that, you know, the conclusion of all this is that if we look at the material world and the problems we inevitably all will face from childhood, you know, from the cradle to the grave, is we should be very pessimistic. Now, as you said, that's not what people go to yoga societies or religious societies or spiritual groups for. They go there because they're already full of anxiety, because of the terrible relationships that everyone has, because of money, intoxication, gambling, and, you know, illicit sex and drink has caused so much troubles and anxiety. But they're thinking, But that's the enjoyment. So that can't be the problem because that's the goal. So they go to the yoga society, the spiritual society, the religious societies with that level of anxiety, and those societies somehow find within their scriptures and their teachings how to successfully have illicit sex and be happy. How to successfully take your intoxications, you know, without overdoing it. You know, how to be a successful businessman and, you know, make a, you know, be a real profiteer among your circle of friends and relatives. So by the power of, some of them, because some of them are infamous for this, like, you know, Scientology and things like that. Don't mention any names, but... the profiteering. But, these Bhagavad Gita verses, they really hit hard at, you know, at the reality, this is being discussed in great detail, but as mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, it is the process of knowledge. If we can't get past this point, you can't get to the next step. In fact, we have to come to the stage of humility, and the stage of humility is, I am suffering in this material world, I am not the control of the material energy, I am completely controlled by the material energy, and it is a place of suffering. We come to that point of humility, then real knowledge begins from that place. Then, of course, real knowledge, if one takes the association of a bona fide spiritual master, then all these other qualities, the bona fide spiritual master will engage one that you are not the supreme, you are not the lord and enjoyer of the material energy, the supreme personality of Godhead, the absolute truth, who is known as Krishna, he is the lord of the material energy, he is the enjoyer, and we enjoy by cooperating as the part cooperates with the whole. Very simple philosophy. So, in Krishna consciousness, so we have books like Nectar of Instruction. Prabhupada mentions Nectar of Instruction is for the neophytes. That means that, and I think you notice, I think they distribute it, huh? Because you can, even if you haven't even come to the movement, you might be walking down the street, someone hands you a book, Nectar of Instruction, and you've got the entire philosophy from the beginning to the ultimate spiritual realization of your eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and your eternal activities in relationship with Him and how to develop your spiritual body and go back to the spiritual world, how the Lord engages with all His different material and spiritual energies, and how we can cooperate with Him and all the other saintly people who are also cooperating with Him. The full picture is given in one little book. If you approach a bona fide spiritual master, what may take millions and millions of lifetimes, and if you go to some other, bogus guru, because they're profiteering, they're not going to give you all the knowledge in one go, and they're not going to just say, and how to practice that, chant Hare Krishna, off you go, oh, how much to pay, no, off you go. Chan, wherever you are, you want a pot in the temple, some free for shower? Free? Yeah, free. They're not doing that, no. I will give you this little bit of knowledge, maybe confusing to you, but you know, it'll only cost you this much. Bear in mind, there's more to come at a higher level, at a higher price, and gradually they just draw people out for years and years and years, you know, pulling in the big bucks, and you know, they give the impression that really only the guru really knows, you know, what is happening. You never really know, but they speak in such a way that you cannot know the absolute truth. You cannot know the process of knowledge. Well, you can't know the process of knowledge. You can't describe the absolute truth. You just have to be there. And how do I get there? So you won't find any of that in the Hare Krishna movement. So this is a little bit about the glories of the Srimad Bhagavatam and why we study all of these different aspects of philosophy, because if we understand very quickly that we're suffering in this material world, we can actually take the spiritual life properly, take shelter of the personality of Godhead, and He will just deliver us from the spiritual world. As Krishna says, I'll just read one more verse and then I'll take some questions. And here again, another very wonderful aspect is that one does not have to, you know, be very qualified in by one's own arrangements in Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Astanga Yoga. Krishna says, chapter 12, verse 7, those who worship me, giving up all their activities unto me, and being devoted to me without deviation, engaged in devotional service, and always meditating upon me, having fixed their minds upon me, O son of Pritha, for them I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. And he sums up in this purport. It is explicitly stated here that the devotees are very fortunate to be delivered very soon from material existence by the Lord. In pure devotional service, one comes to the realization that God is great and the individual soul is subordinate to Him. His duty is to render service to the Lord, and if he does not, then he will render service to Maya. All summed up in one. So, Krishna himself, we don't have to become great yogis, jnanis, or anything. If we take shelter of the Supreme Lord, He will do everything and deliver us through the process, guiding us within, giving the spiritual master, giving all the transcendental books, all the transcendental wisdom in Srimad Bhagavatam from all the greatest sages, and He will give us all the help we need and take us back to Godhead. So I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments.
Thank you, Prabhu. Now, I had written down one question when I was going through this section. I'll read the question and I'd like your thoughts on that. The sage is presenting this allegory of life struggles to a pious king, someone who's very opulent and not in a financially or socially struggling position of general public. He mentions the financial, social, familial, and other struggles that may be more struggling to general public, but not so much for a king. My question therefore is, how do we present these perfect instructions to financially and socially well-positioned people, instructions which present realities of life that may be seen as something that happens to people less than them?
Well, as Prabhupada mentions in this particular purport today, he says, in the material world there are many transactions between peoples and societies as well as between nations. But gradually these end in enmity between the two parties. So he says in modern age most countries have developed economically, but due to business exchanges, relationships seem to be strained. Finally, wars are declared between nations. So in a general sense, the rulers also suffer. You know, what happens, what we see play out is that when rulers don't cooperate with other rulers in the world and therefore transgress human rights and the rights of other living entities and they're destructive to the planet itself, then other nations, other rulers, kings and queens, put sanctions on them, which causes, you know, of course, quite often that plays out for the people in the beginning, but then the people revolt against the ruler because they're the ones who cause the problem, why they're suffering, why they're getting the sanctions, and then the rulers end up getting thrown out if they become more and more belligerent. Then sometimes there's war and they're overthrown with the help of countries that see that people they're living a very cruel and horrible existence under such a ruler. So it does play out. Quite often, rulers may be the last to suffer, but when they do suffer, it is very significant. Because rulers do, they are responsible for the welfare of the citizens, and if they exploit the citizens for their own sense gratification and their own family, what have you, then they do suffer a significant reaction. And therefore, as Prabhupada mentioned, you know, one of the prime ministers of India, one astrologer said that in his next birth, he took birth as a dog in Scandinavia, and Prabhupada tended to agree. So they take birth as, you know. So it is here that they, in one sense, what happens is that rulers usually have amassed a very significant amount of piety. So, in one sense, they're still reaping the so-called happiness of the results of their pious activities somewhere in past lives, which allows them to enjoy an extravagant amount of wealth and opulence and luxury like that. But what they're doing is, and especially because of the simple activities and the extravagance, they actually use up what could be opulence that they may have for many, many, many lifetimes. They can use that up in 10 or 20 years, and then of course, so therefore sometimes one doesn't see that they're suffering like the average person because they do have some stock of piety from previous lives, but then gradually as they use up that piety, then they have to, then they're subjected to the sinful reactions, the karmic reactions of what they've done to many, many people that they're supposed to be looking after. So it does play out for them the same, but it's not always seen immediately. But, they also,
You only have to, if you look at the news about royal families in this world, you see they have the same problem. Someone gets married, the two wives don't get on, so they separate, then the money's cut off. Chop. No more money. Which is very difficult when you're in a very prominent person, because you actually have to have security these days if you're very prominent. That costs you, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands, if not millions, to keep yourself safe, because you're a target. You've got to have, so the monetary problems of being wealthy are greater than the money. So the average person, you just walk down the street, but a very, very famous, wealthy person, they can't do that. To walk down the street, they have to disguise themselves, or if they're not going to disguise themselves and go somewhere, they have to have immense security, private planes, private cars, escorts, bodyguards, security cameras, dogs, like that. It costs a lot of money to be wealthy. So they have a lot of trouble, because in Kali Yuga, you can have millions. If you're a wealthy person, those millions and millions and millions of dollars can be used up very quickly, because you have to have millions of dollars to live as a wealthy person. So, therefore, in one sense, despite the millions and millions of dollars, they have the same problem. And if there's some problem in the family relationships, which there is, because money's at the heart of it, then they have the same problems we find here, but just on a bigger scale. Of course, in Kali Yuga, on this planet, the average person is very, very poor. If you take the majority of people in this world, their position is very impoverished. And impoverished means that the majority of people in this world would struggle to get proper education. They struggle to have a home. They struggle to get proper food. And they struggle to get proper medical. And that is the standard of most people in this world. Huge, millions, billions and millions of people. If it comes to medicine, they can't get it. Proper education, they can't. They just, no hope. A nice home, that's not there. What was the other one I said? So education, home, medicine, and nutritious foods. Even down to water. So, therefore, as Prabhupada is mentioning in the Bhagavad Gita, the average person certainly are going to have difficulties of being in Kali Yuga. Someone said something the other day that people who are poor can't afford to be poor. It's like a cycle that there's a certain level of poverty that the world is in, where it's not possible to get out of that poverty, and it's not possible to stop reducing that, increasing the poverty situation. That's the situation as well. So certainly, you know, this, you know, for them it's more pertinent, but also, you know, amongst the very, very wealthy, the wealthiest persons in this world, they're experiencing the same thing, but they've also got some piety from previous lives whereby they still have some, you know, enjoyment. But still, they're in exactly the same position. And they're in exactly the same position as this, that does a, you know, a person with billions and billions of dollars suffer any less from a disease than an impoverished person? In some cases, they suffer more. Sometimes the people who are very poor, they've developed a tolerance, you know, and an ability that just by their mental stamina, because they just, there is nothing to fix it, so they're able to just rise above it, not think about it too much, and just put it and they literally have to work through it. A wealthy person gets the same disease, they suffer more because they have so little tolerance to discomfort. So,
what you're explaining that I'm hearing is the opulence and the comforts brought by one's piety become the cause of one's suffering.
And the opulence of one's piety becomes the cause of their poverty in the next life. If you look at the way people become wealthy and maintain their wealth by exploiting and keeping people in poverty, then that means, you know, they will, and to just watch people suffer in poverty while they spend $3 million on a collector's stamp, you know, $1 million for Michael Jackson's left glove, you know, and while they, you know, they've got 100 cars in their garage they don't even drive, and they spend, you know, $1 million on this rare collectible. When people are, you know, walking barefoot without shoes. So, when they, you know, for people who are able to give in charity and to help people, and they do not do that, they just turn a blind eye, there's actually, there's a karmic reaction for that. So, if someone sees someone in great distress, one has the ability to do something and doesn't do something, there's a karmic reaction for that. Therefore, Krishna said to Arjuna, you'll incur sins by not fighting. You're in the royal order. You have wealth, you have power, you can control the wealth of the world. And if you're capable of that, and if you don't do it, you'll be sinful. So therefore, you know, these leaders of the world, you know, they can't say, it's not my problem. They have the power, they have, you know, they're the ones in authority, they're the ones in power, they're the ones with the facility. If they don't do something, and they can, they have to suffer that sinful reaction. And the sinful reaction is that they must experience the suffering of those persons who they didn't help. And be in that position to suffer while other people look on. They have to suffer that exact situation. So, in one sense, we may say that wealthy people may not suffer straight away, but then you just have to wait one or two lifetimes, or even this lifetime, and you see that they will. So, it may not immediately apply to them, but gradually it will definitely, the same thing apply. So there is no escape. Any other questions? Or,
So when they say embarrassed, here people are not really embarrassed. They are not embarrassed for stealing or begging or borrowing from the
previous verse or in this verse being inimical towards other living entities, they are not embarrassed. And I understand it, it means something else. So what does it exactly mean in this context? And also almost dying. Almost dying, does it mean sometimes due to severe disease they commit suicide, they die in terms of due to the embarrassment, because they want to be, they want to live openly. Well, but
to give an example, that there's a statistic that the majority of people, young people, who commit suicide have a very good Facebook profile. So they're embarrassed. Everyone is enjoying. They're all, I'm looking at everyone's Facebook. Everyone's having such a wonderful time. I just seem to be a loser. I can't do what other people seem to do. In their embarrassment, they don't want people to know that I'm suffering. Everyone's enjoying, because it's false enjoyment. They say Facebook or false enjoyment. So in embarrassment, they put up their Facebook profile. Oh no, I'm popular too. I'm enjoying. Look at my health. Look at my beauty. Like that. And then they commit suicide. So the majority of people, especially young people, who commit suicide, it's seen that they have one of the best Facebook profiles. They're embarrassed. And it doesn't say embarrassed, it says fully embarrassed. So the actual meaning is they're embarrassed. The market for cosmetic surgery means people embarrassed. Oh, this one is, they're calling this one beautiful. Oh, I better get a nose job or this or that or the other, because I'm embarrassed. And then after getting the cosmic surgery, then they're embarrassed. Oh, this looks a bit wonky. Get up here, look like a blowfish. And then they try and fix that, and then they become more embarrassed. So, no, they're embarrassed. The false pretense that many people in this world have to show how happy they are and well-doing is because they're embarrassed to just not have what others are. And for that, they will steal and they will take so much intoxication, and then in their anxiety, or what is sweeping throughout the world is like gambling. So many people have so much and I don't have it, and no matter how hard I work, I can't get it. So maybe if I gamble, and then they gamble and they lose their money. Well, now I'm really embarrassed. I don't have it, or whatever I did have, I've lost that. I had a neighbour who was about 70 something, and her husband was about 80. He worked all his life to get a little boat. Not a big boat, but a little boat. It's going to cost him about $20,000. So. And he didn't know, but his wife gambled, to get the things that she wants. See, many old people, they're embarrassed that they're lonely. So what they do is they go down to the pokies. If they can't find some spiritual organisation, they'll go to the pokies, whichever is the closest. And they'll sit there, oh, look at me. Oh, so much money. Just going in. I'm not even looking. And then, zing. Got the nice coat, and that, I'm doing all right. I'm not old and lonely. Get out of here. And the more money he's going, the more embarrassment. So this, I knew the person because he lived just across the road. One day, and he was also giving the money to pay the mortgage on their home to his wife, who's supposed to be paying the mortgage. So one day he went to the bank because he thought, I should have enough now in their joint account to buy my boat. And when he got there was nothing there. Now, this lady had also inherited about $250,000. So when he went to the bank, he found that the inheritance was gone. His money, and to get that money at 80 years old, he was working as a furniture removalist, which young men in their 20s do, for years. He found that the mortgage had not been paid and that they were going to lose their house. There's no question about it. Now, they're going to lose their house. She had spent every penny of it and was also in debt. He died of a broken heart. Now, I've heard of that. I've heard of people dying of a broken heart. He literally died of a broken heart. Very sad and very embarrassing.
Did he know that she was
gone? He didn't. Well, he knew, but not to the extent. You know, it's like he knew that she'd go down and gamble, but not to the extent that she was. And the gambling problems, they're common. Very common. You know, people. I knew a lady who's just around the corner, so this is within two streets, and she did a similar thing, that the husband was working two jobs, and of course she's thinking, we just still can't get that money for all the luxuries, if we just do the cheating way and gambling, and they lose, and then they go, oh, I'll get it back, and then, and it's just a cycle. They lost their house as well. And of course, you imagine what that does to your relationship, and that's what is being described here. But these things are very common. If you actually look at the statistics of people who destroy their family through intoxication, but it can be done quietly. Do you know the greatest level of intoxication is prescription drugs? So if you go to America, Australia, places like that, it's not, they're not shooting up heroin or this, that, the other. They're going there to get the, prescription drugs. And it's destroying their health and destroying their ability to look after their kids and destroying their marriage. And that's very common, extremely common. It's uncommon that someone's not doing that. So, intoxication, gambling, and then there's criminal behaviour, so many of these different things are very common. So, no, these, but again, the bug of the tongue wants us to look at, but if you these statistics, you really have to search hard to find them, but if you search hard to find them, you'll be shocked, because it's not like, when you're driving down the freeway, that's not what's on the billboard. Look at the terrible state of society. Look at the statistics. You won't see that. You'll see enjoy. Or you'll see couples enjoying, and they're enjoying in the new estate, and they're enjoying in here, and they're enjoying like that. But you won't see the statistics of all those people who are supposedly enjoying, how they're embarrassed with material life. Those statistics are hidden. But the bug of the tongue tells us, if you look, you'll see them. Okay. We'll leave it there. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.